Hello, dear listeners. Do you ever wonder why we use certain phrases or words? What are the origins? Where did they come from? You know, those funny sayings we use in everyday life, like wolf in sheep's clothing, or push the envelope, when pigs fly, or knock on wood. Well, do we have an amazing new podcast for you to check out. Why Do We Say That podcast is hosted by amazing and fun father-son duo Scott and Liam Kelly, and they check out all these sayings and ponder all those questions and dive deep into why we say that and where they come from. It's really freaking awesome. I've been enjoying it so much, and I really love to bring you guys new podcasts that you can listen to. It's really fun when you get something like a really good, strong father and son dynamic on a podcast, and they have a lot of fun. So definitely check them out. You can find them on Apple Podcasts under Why Do We Say That from Scott and Liam, and we will have the links in the show notes as well. And now, guys, back to the show. The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
Look, as much as I love that we don't really see images of that film, I just want to see that film.
The terrible Australian Bea Jermaine.
If they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
It contains coarse language.
After it was over and the credits were done, my friend just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was
mature themes.
Her husband wants her need satisfied and she had a zombie baby with him.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everyone, this is Bea Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 13 of Podcasters of Horror, the podcast where my co-host Super Marcy and I do a retrospective series on the episodes from the 2000s TV anthology horror show, Masters of Horror. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hello. Doing all right. Can't believe we're actually here. We have finished Masters of Horror. We are here to talk about the final two episodes of season two.
Indeed. It's been quite a journey. I just realized that it's been 2 years since we first started this series.
Oh, wow. Has it been that long?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though. I sort of realized it probably would have been a lot sooner, but, you know, back in the old days when we didn't have a schedule, we just recorded podcasts whenever we wanted to.
That is true. We are much more on the ball this time.
Yeah, because I think in 2019 we did, like, about probably 4 or 5 shows, and then last year we did about 4 or 5, and then this year I think we've done about, this will be our third one this year. But now,
there we go.
Yeah, so... But so it's been quite a journey in terms of like how long it's been, but most importantly in how we sort of, when we started this show, it was, we wanted to sort of like do as a retrospective to Masters of Horror and kind of give our sort of thoughts and feelings on it, especially as compared to other TV horror anthology shows. It's still probably one of the most underrated out there, mainly because the fact it was only... lasted for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
So I just can't believe we're here now talking about the final 2 episodes of the series.
It's very strange, but the podcast is not ending, and after this episode, our next one, we are going to watch the 13 episodes for the only season of Fear Itself. And the format will be much the same. We'll have 2 episodes. We'll watch 2 episodes per episode up until the last 3, which we have put on a podcast altogether. And once we do finish Fear Itself, we're going to watch another Mick Garris horror anthology, but this time a film called Nightmare Cinema. So still lots of exciting stuff still to come.
Oh, definitely. And also beyond that, we'll be branching out from sort of the Mick Garris anthology franchises and moving on to talking about anthology horror films and also some of the TV shows as well. But before we actually do get to Fear Itself, we did record a very special episode, which will be out as a bonus episode before we start Fear Itself next month, of which our good friends of ours, Amy and B, decided joined us to talk about some episodes of Goosebumps as well.
Yes, indeed. So we do have a bonus episode coming very soon. So keep an eye out for that. And, you know, in sticking with the anthology theme, watching Goosebumps is very similar.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And we definitely have a lot to talk about on that one. But so I'm looking forward to everyone to hearing that episode once it drops. But we'll let you all know when it does. But before then, though, I guess we'll get right to it and talk about our final two episodes of Masters of Horror, in which we'll be talking about the 12-episode The Washingtonians and the episode 13, Dream Cruise. Mm-hmm. Now, Marcy, are you ready to talk about both these episodes?
I am definitely ready to talk about these episodes.
Awesome. And we'll get straight to it. We'll start off with episode 12 of season 2, The Washingtonians.
Americans are only too happy to believe what we historians told them to believe. George Washington was not the gentle, kind old man put him up to be. He was a monster.
It is. Do you remember it, Amy?
Yeah, I remember.
I did find something in my grandmother's house.
There might be something there worth more than the unexperienced eye can see. I'm not sure you realize what you have here, Mr. Franks. This letter could forever change the image we have of George Washington. You want this knowledge for known?
Daddy, do you want to come in?
We're calling the police! Him! Amy!
Which was directed by Peter Medak. And for those out there who don't know who he was the director of the classic haunted house film, The Changeling. But he also has directed other films as well, like The Craze, Romeo's Bleeding, and Species 2.
Yeah.
And this episode was written by Richard Schismar and Jonathan Scheck, which is based on the short story of the same name by Bentley Little. And also, the episode stars Jonathan Scheck, Venus Terzo, Chris Calhoun, Richard Stroh, Julia Tortolano, and if I butchered anyone's names, please forgive me, and Sal Rubinek. Mm-hmm. And the plot summary for this one is, a man finds his family in danger after discovering a shocking secret about the United States Founding Fathers, in which a secret society is hell-bent on keeping a secret at any cost.
Mm.
Now, Marcy, I know this was your first time watching The Washingtonians. Tell us your thoughts on this episode.
All right. Well, this episode was very kind of cheesy and campy. It's I don't know if it intended to have that style or come off that way, but it does. And I don't know. It's very hokey. And this whole thing with, like, George Washington finding this potential weird letter that says, I will skin your children and eat them, which apparently means he was a cannibalistic child killer. It's very, very strange. I don't know. What did you think?
Well, I've seen this episode a few times, and I will admit, the first, when they sort of announced that season two was happening and they put out the list of all the episodes that they were going to do for this season, one of the ones that did catch my eye was The Washingtonians. Because when I read the premise about a man discovering that that one of America's biggest kept secret is that George Washington was in fact a cannibal, I read that and I thought, oh, that sounds amazing. Like, he could do so much with that premise. And the fact that Peter Medak, who of course, you know, made The Changeling, was going to direct this episode, definitely had me very excited as well. But when I did watch the episode the first time, out of all the episodes that I've seen for this show, this is the one I feel like gave me the most crushing of disappointments. Because I was not expecting, I guess in a way I was expecting that they were going to do a straight-laced, very serious take on this story. But the fact that, but from both a filmmaking and writing and performance standpoint, they decided to treat it more as a campy, dark comedy, just didn't really set well with me at all. And it just really took me out of the whole episode as I was watching it. And I've watched it a few times since, and it's been quite a while since I've last seen it. So I thought I was kind of curious to see how I would feel about it on this most recent rewatch. Like, would I kind of appreciate sort of the campiness that it's going for, or would I still feel the same as I did when I first watched it? I got to admit, I still pretty much feel the exact same about it. Like I said, the potential it was there for this episode, given that this is a really strong and great premise that you could do so much with. But the fact that they do sort of take a much more sort of campy, dark comedic approach to this material really just doesn't vibe with it as well. And I think the main reason for that is that sort of the comedy that they go for with the film just doesn't really work, and it's just not really that funny, to be honest.
It's a lot of scenes make me feel more uncomfortable than anything, like the weird way that all the old people in the town act.
Yeah,
it just creeped me out.
Yeah, I would say,
not in a good way, by the way.
Well, I think it, for me, what did work, if there was anything that I found genuinely creepy about the episode, was of course the Washingtonians themselves, because they sort of cast like a wide array of sort of unique actors to play all these roles, and they all have a very specific kind of look to all of them that if you put a bit of makeup to it would make them very creepy on screen. Like, you get the sense of that from the very beginning when Jonathan Sheck, my arch nemesis, and also his family meet the character of Samuel Madison, played by Myron Natwick. Like, he was legit creepy. I don't know whether it was of the performance or the actor, but there was something just really off about it, and I don't know whether that was intentional or not, because at times he kind of reminded me of, like, the character from Poltergeist 2, The Other Side. I keep forgetting the actor's name, but the preacher character, the really creepy. That's who he kind of. I'm going to look this up so I don't forget. In the meantime, though, I would say if there was any performance in the whole movie that at least worked for me, it was him, mainly because he was genuinely creepy. And he's probably like one of the most creepiest characters that this whole series has ever produced. Yeah. Julian Beck is who I was speaking of.
Yeah.
Yeah, who played Reverend Henry Kane in Poltergeist.
That's right, Reverend Kane.
He kind of had that sort of vibe about him, except had a bit more of a debonair flavor to him as a character. And of course, like all the other sort of like members of the Washingtonians, like they were kind of creepy as well. But the interesting thing about it, and like maybe it's because we had watched a lot of Goosebumps episodes recently, and maybe it was on the back of my mind, but watching this episode, it kind of, in a way, and maybe I don't know whether this was intentional or not, but it did feel more like a grown-ups episode of Goosebumps.
I get what you mean. It definitely kind of did.
Yeah, because there's a kid character in it who is played by, I can't find her name because it's not listed on Wikipedia, so I'll have to go to IMDb. She's the daughter of Jonathan Sheck's character.
Amy.
Yes. And we kind of see a lot of this story from her. Julia Tortolano, again, if I butchered her last name, please forgive me. she plays the Amy, and we kind of see a lot of this from her point of view because throughout most of this film, she's like, is kind of this kind of weird little girl who's like frightened of everything and even over the smallest of things. And we kind of see everything a lot from her point of view, especially when the scene when they go to the funeral for Jonathan Sheck's character's grandmother, like all the sort of members of the Washingtonians, who we don't know are members of this elite group at the time, they had this, like, they just sort of, like, really dote on her, and they just say these sort of double entendres of, like, oh, she looks so cute to eat and stuff like that. And
yeah. She
like, you see from her point of view, and you can definitely see, like, why she would be freaked out by these people, the way how Peter Madden kind of shoots these scenes from her point of view. Mm. But, again, I don't know if this kind of grown-up Goosebumps vibe that this whole episode had really kind of works overall.
No, and look, I don't like saying, you know, this kid was a bad actor, but she was a bad actor.
Yeah.
I don't know if she just, you know, didn't have any or much experience or what was going on or if it was how it was written. But her scenes where she's meant to be scared are just really, they're unfortunately quite laughable. But, yeah, I don't know. Something about this one just felt way too hokey and silly to actually be legit scary. Aside from the old people, and they were just like, go away. They were just gross. They just came off as so gross. You know, performance-wise, like, yeah, I think the performances are fairly decent except for the kid. Mm. Like, you know, Jonathan, how do you say his name?
Sheck.
Jonathan Sheck, I think he's fine. Probably my favourite, you know, actor in the film. Like, Saul Rubinek was fine. Venus Terso was fine. The kid, yeah, just did not work. But, yeah, overall, I think... Yeah, this one just doesn't really work, and I don't know what it really wanted to say at the end of the day.
Yeah, because the episode ends, because once the truth, like, it actually ends on a great note, because the family's in danger, they're about to be killed and eaten, and then Saul Rubinek and some federal agents showed up with machine guns and pretty much kill all the members of the Washingtonians. And then I sort of realized, before we get to the end of the episode, is that you remember that scene with the two deputy cops? They're like, they sort of show up
Yeah.
Do you realize one of those actors is Daniel Cudmore, and he played Colossus in some of the X-Men movies?
I did not.
Indeed. Like, that was him as one of the deputies. As I was saying, Saul Rubinek, who I think is probably, again, one of the strongest performances in the film, and probably for me is clearly the one who kind of at least has an idea of what type of episode he is in, because he's clearly not taking the story that seriously at all.
Yeah.
And so, like, they show up, they kill all the Washingtonians with machine guns, and then, of course, it's the secret about George Washington being a cannibal is finally released onto the world.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like, Jonathan Sheck and his family, they sort of have a takeaway dinner being delivered to them, which is all vegetarian food.
Yeah.
And then they realize that the $1 bill, like the American $1 bill, which has George Washington's face on it, has been changed to George W. Bush.
Mm.
So I agree. I don't know what this final scene is trying to say. I guess it's just kind of, again, poking fun at George W. Bush. But I don't know what kind of point it is actually making. Like, you know, yeah, George, I guess it's trying to say, like, yeah, like they've gone from one, I mean, in the world of this movie, one really horrible person to a horrible person that isn't as bad as George Washington, since George W. Bush has not eaten any kids.
That we're aware of.
That we're aware of, yes.
Yeah. I don't know, it just really didn't work for me overall. Like, this is definitely, I think, one of the weaker entries.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I didn't connect with this one really at all.
Yeah, just, I can, like I said, I think I get what they're going for, like going for a sort of a dark comedic horror film, but I don't know, I think as a comedy, it doesn't work. As a horror film, it doesn't work. Like, I think the tones just don't gel at all, and I think both director Peter Madig and the screenwriters, Jonathan Sheck and Richard Schusmer, I don't feel like they had a real grip on this story. And from what I hear, the original short story actually did have dark humor in it, but I think they kind of went further into that with this episode. But I don't know, it just didn't really work, and I don't feel like it really sort of capitalized on the premise. And the funny thing is, like, we've talked about this many, many times throughout previous episodes of podcasters of horror, whether like some of the episodes could work as a feature film or not. I think this premise could definitely work as a feature film.
Yeah, I think it could. But I think you need to have a completely different style and tone to it, for sure.
Yeah,
like, something, you know, it could still be something kind of goofy that doesn't take itself too seriously. Or it could be a really, you know, kind of dark satire or something. But whatever the hell this movie tried to do, this doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. It just doesn't really work as a whole. And it was disappointing because, like, I think out of all the episodes that were announced for season two, this one definitely had the most potential with its plot. And it just doesn't quite get there. And even Julia, again, if I butcher her last name, please forgive me. Julia Tortolano, who plays Amy, she definitely, again, I don't want to, like you, I don't want to harp on her too much since, you know, she's a child, but yeah, out of all the cast, she's definitely is the weakest link performance-wise. But I will give credit, like, I think the performances of this episode definitely kind of saved this one from being a full-on disaster of an episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess for ratings, I give this one 2 fake wooden teeth out of 5.
I would give this one 2 out of 5 as well. And like I said, the potential was there, but unfortunately it just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
Now we'll move on to our very final episode ever of Masters of Horror, which, of course, was Dream Cruise.
Four years since we got married. My Yuri is my most treasured thing. Thou shalt not commit adultery, right, Jack? You know what happens to people who do.
So he knows about us.
I wonder. That's strange. We should see the shore by now.
The prop probably got hung up on some seaweed.
Now, Marcy, tell us who directed this one, who wrote it, and who stars in it, and what is the plot?
Okay, so the 13th episode of Season 2 of Masters of Horror, Dream Cruise, directed by Noriyu Tsuruta. I probably have said it wrong, I'm sorry. Short story was based on a short story by Koji Suzuki, who did the stories for Ringu and Dark Water.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. The teleplay was by Naoya Takayama and Norio Tsuruta. I apologize, I cannot pronounce Japanese names. The film stars Daniel Gillies, Ryo Ishibashi, and Yoshino Kimura. And the plot synopsis, which is from Wikipedia, Jack, an American lawyer working in Tokyo, has fallen in love with the wife of his most valued client, Eiji. Despite Jack's deep-rooted fear of the sea, he reluctantly accepts Eiji's invitation to join the couple for a day trip on the Tokyo Bay. Pleasure slowly turns to terror as they discover the watery destiny in store for each of them. And that's it.
Yeah. I guess I'll go first.
Yes.
Well, Norio Tsuruta... Sorry, apologies. Norio Tsuruta, he definitely is the second Japanese director to work on Masters of Horror after Takashi Miike, who, of course, delivered, probably without a doubt, one of the most disturbing episodes of the entire series, which was Imprint. So I was very... I've never heard of Tsuruta prior to his announcement for this season of Masters of Horror. The only thing I sort of knew of him is that he directed, previously this episode, he directed Ring Zero Birthday, and, of course, another... and also the film Premonition, which is, not the Sandra Bullock film that sort of came out around the mid-2000s. This was a Japanese film that also had a similar name. Mm-hmm. So I had no kind of expectations when it came to this episode, but I at the same time, though, I definitely thought after kind of Takashi Miike, I was curious to see how another director from Japan would do an episode for Masters of Horror. But the interesting thing is, and before we actually start with our thoughts on the episode, what I think is interesting about this episode is there's actually two versions of this episode. Mm-hmm. There's the 55-minute version, which, of course, premiered on television when Masters of Horror was on air. However, though, if you lived in Japan, they released a 90-minute version of this episode, which was actually released in cinemas. And the interesting thing is, depending on where you look, because some DVDs and also streaming services that have Masters of Horror on them have either the shorter cut or the longer extended cut. And I remember when I bought the DVDs back in the day, the longer cut was on them. However, when I got the Blu-rays like a few years ago, it only had the shorter version of this episode. Mm. However, though, because Stan, which has Masters of Horror here in Australia, actually has the feature-length version of this episode. So, so they sort of have, so there's two versions of this episode out there. But, Marcy, what did you think? But regardless of the sort of the interesting backstory of this episode, like I said, other than sort of like knowing that another Japanese director worked on this episode, I wasn't really sure what to expect, but I was kind of curious regardless, since, you know, Masters of Horror kind of hit it, knocked it out of the park the first time with Takashi Miike's episode. Unfortunately, though, I think Dream Cruise is definitely one of the worst episodes of the whole series. I kind of felt the same about it then as I do now in this most recent watch. And I think the main problem I have with this episode is it's just very boring.
Yeah.
And like, I think at this point, because J-horror was huge in the late 90s and mid-2000s, and I think around this time when this episode was airing, I think J-horror kind of started to run its course, and it just sort of became very kind of cliche and formulaic at this point.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of great J-horror films that were released around this period, but you could definitely tell as the sort of the years went on, they started to become very, pretty much almost the same in terms of their style, tone, and how they sort of achieve their scares. And Dream Cruise is definitely no different. I guess the only difference between this one and others that came out is, of course, this was an American produced one. And of course, Daniel Gillies, who actually is a Kiwi, was cast in the lead role. And this one was done with in English language rather than Japanese. Although there is some Japanese spoken through the film, but it's mostly an English language story. Yeah. But unfortunately, though, even though, yeah, it definitely has the look and feel of a J-horror, particularly like the classic ones that we all know and love, like Ringu or Dark Water. But unfortunately, the story itself just isn't all that interesting. The characters are just not engaging at all. And also, it's just boring and just very cliched. But and no matter which version, because I've seen both versions, the 55-minute version and the nearly 90-minute version. And unfortunately, they're pretty much exactly the same, regardless whichever cut you see. Because I know a few times, every time I watch this episode, I've always nodded off during this episode.
Yeah.
Because it's just so slow. I mean, I guess one of the things I do appreciate about J-horror is that they always take a much more deliberate pace when it comes to achieving their scares. But unfortunately, it just didn't really work here. But besides me, of course, Marcy, I know, Washingtonians, this was your first time watching Dream Cruise. What did you think of the episode overall?
Yeah, so I watched the version that was on Stan, so the 80-something minute version, and I think this is an example of, like, yeah, I think the story is decent enough. Like, it is interesting on the surface, and this could have been an episode or something that went for, like, 20 minutes. You could have told this story effectively in 20, 25 minutes. It did not need to be 83 minutes or even 55 minutes. And it is because it is quite bland and boring for such a, you know, interesting premise that, you know, only focuses on three characters. That's really interesting. There's kind of almost like the dead calm kind of vibes there.
Yeah.
But I just don't think they really did anything with it. Like, there's some moments of tension and some really horrible things that you see happen, but I just don't think it affects you the way it should. And I think it's just that it takes too long to get there. It's just, it's not that interesting. And unfortunately, visually, it can be quite bland at times. But there's, you know, I think the intentions were well, but the end product just doesn't work. And I don't think the acting was that great either.
Yeah.
Daniel Gillies, or however you say his name, I really thought he was terrible. Mm. He did not work for me whatsoever. I thought at least Yoshino Kimura, who played the wife, Yuri, I thought she was probably the best of the lot. At least there was something there. But this is definitely one of the weaker entries. It just feels like the story they had was way too drawn out when it shouldn't be. You know, just, yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
The way it really should, you know?
Yeah, and I agree. And I mean, Daniel Gillies, I think I do agree he's very bland in the role, even though he does have an interesting character because he has a bit of a tragic backstory where as a child he couldn't save his brother from drowning. So he has a bit of a fear of the ocean and he feels the guilt that he couldn't save his brother. Like, that's some interesting stuff that you can work with. But unfortunately, his performance isn't engaging at all, and you just don't really care what happens to him or his journey throughout this whole story. And also, like, the writing itself doesn't really sort of give him that much to do. But I do agree with you that Yoshino Kimura, who plays Yuri, she is definitely the best performance in the film. I thought she did a really solid job, and I really liked her character a lot. And one thing I was disappointed is that Ryo Ishibashi, who is a great, great actor. Every film I've seen him in, he's always great. I mean, probably most people would know him for being the lead in Audition.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so he's great in that, and he's been really good in other English language roles I've seen him in. But unfortunately, as this kind of, like, psychotic husband who sort of, you know, is very suspecting that he and his wife and Daniel Gillies are having an affair. So he takes them out to the middle of the ocean with the intent of killing them both. Mm. And of course, once they get out there, you realize that he was previously married to another woman who mysteriously disappeared. And we find out why is because he murdered her at the same spot and threw a body into the ocean. And now her spirit has come back.
Mm.
And to seek revenge not only against him, but also Yuri as well. And there are moments where there are some moments that definitely have potential. Like there are moments where dead wife, possesses him at some point and tries to sort of kill Jack and Yuri. But yeah, and so there are some effective little creepy moments there, and also some pretty cool kind of gore and special effects as well. But yeah, it's just standard stock J horror cliches, and you know, and it's stuff we've seen many times before, and
yeah,
it just doesn't really work, unfortunately. I mean, I know that the original the story that this episode was based on, which is from the writer of both Ringu and Dark Water. Like those, you and I have seen both those movies, and they're great J horror films with a lot of compelling characters, and they're they're actually got creepy stories. And but the difference is between those two and this one is those films were actually really well made. But unfortunately, this one doesn't quite work on the same level. And
You know, whether it's the script that let it down or the actors, it's hard to say. Something just didn't work. And, you know, Daniel Gillies, or Guiley, I don't know how to say his name. Like, generally, he's a pretty decent actor. I think he's done some pretty good work. It was really a shame just to see that he was really boring. It was very bland and just did not really work or add much to it.
I kind of feel like, even in a way, like it just seemed like the story was just going through the motions as well. The motion in the ocean, if you will. I apologize for that lame joke.
You should, damn it.
I will. But yeah, it just felt like, you know, it. I guess when you compare to something like Imprint, which definitely, which, you know, as great as that episode is, it wasn't perfect, but it made up in a lot of ways. It had some pretty solid performances, a really creepy tone, some really disturbing scenes. But you could definitely tell that McKay was very passionate about this material. And I guess Sarada, I guess, probably wasn't. Or at least that's kind of the impression I got. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I just felt like it just, like, it was a kind of film that just was going through the motions and just didn't feel like it had any passion behind it.
Yeah. Look, overall, it seemed way too kind of bland and long and boring to really leave much of an impact.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of sad being, like, in hindsight, like, at the time when this episode aired, like, I think everyone involved kind of assumed that season 3 was going to happen, especially since the first two seasons had been pretty well in the ratings and also was critically still well received. And I guess like having this episode be the very last episode ever, a Masters of Horror, kind of sends it on a slight sour note because it wasn't like the best episode to end the whole series on. But I understand from what I remember back in the day, the final episode, Mick Garris wanted a foreign director to do the last episode of each season and particularly have those episodes shot in their particular country. But, I mean, it ended up really well with Imprint because that ended the first season with a bang, but unfortunately this episode kind of ends not only this season but the whole series itself on a bit of a whimper.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I would probably give this the exact same rating I gave The Washingtonians, and that is 2 out of 5 vengeful spirits.
I would give it a slightly lower rating. I give this one about 1.5 out of 5. It is very boring. It's very sluggish. And the funny thing is, like, the feature-length version, nothing really happens until, like, the 40-minute mark. And it just takes a long time to get going, and it's just very sluggish and poorly paced and just not scary at all. And even in the slightly shorter 55-minute cut, it was exactly the same as well. But I think actually it is funny, though. I was going to say, like, as we said with Washingtonians, like, is this the type of story that could work in a feature film? And we kind of got our answer because there are two versions of the story.
Yeah.
And either short or longer version really works for this story.
Yeah, maybe, you know, a few more, you know, script rewrites, possibly it could have.
Yeah.
But yeah, as it stands, no.
Yeah. Unfortunately, just not a good episode. But, well, that's it, Marcy. That is Masters of Horror. We have talked about all 26 episodes of the series.
We have, and I might go cry now. No, just kidding.
Indeed.
We've made it. We actually have gotten this far. So, yeah, the next episode you'll hear from us will be the bonus episode where we will talk about some Goosebumps, and then the unofficial season 3, which is the only season of Fear itself, will be next.
Indeed. I'm very excited to talk about Fear itself. I haven't seen it. I've only ever saw that series only once.
I haven't seen it at all.
So I'm definitely curious to see how I feel about it on a second rewatch. But before we head out, Marcy, I have a very important question I need to ask you. Now that we have watched all 26 episodes of Masters of Horror, which would you say are your top 3 favorite episodes of the entire series?
Cigarette Burns from season 1, The Black Cat from season 2, and back to season 1 again with Sick Girl.
Nice.
They would be probably my top 3 favorites.
Those what are about really you? I would say for me, going from 3 to 1, my third favorite episode would be Homecoming. My third favorite episode would be Imprint, which is just a fantastic episode. It's not perfect, but it's definitely, without a doubt, one of the most disturbing and creepiest episodes that was ever produced for this series. And, I mean, it's so creepy, in fact, that this episode itself got banned from TV in the US, which says a lot. number 2 would definitely be Brad Anderson's Sounds Like, which is an episode I think is truly great. I love that episode the first time I watched it, and it was like a perfect episode for me, and I still feel the same about it now. And, of course, finally, well, Sounds Like was my all-time favorite episode of the series, but, however, I got a new favorite episode, and that, of course, is The Black Cat from Stuart Gordon.
Oh, there you go.
So those are my top 3 favorite episodes of Masters of Horror.
There we go.
But, well, that'll be a wrap on this episode of Podcasters of Horror. We hope all of our listeners enjoyed it. Now, all of y'all need to sit. But, Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
You can find us at our base of operations at supermarcy.com. You can follow me personally on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesupernetwork. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/thesupernetworkgroup. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/sm_supernetwork. We are on Instagram at the.super.network. We are also on TikTok at the Super Network. You can find our YouTube channel at the Super Network YouTube channel, where you can find full episodes of Podcasters of Horror streaming on there. And of course, you can find us at all the major podcast streaming platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google, Deezer, Spotify, Stitcher. Bede, what about you?
Well, if people want to find me personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJamine, or my personal writer's page on Facebook at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And of course, you can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com before my reviews and columns.
Excellent.
And yeah, that'll be the end of this episode of Podcasters of Horror. We want to thank all of our listeners for coming on this journey with us throughout Masters of Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And we look forward to next month, in which we will start on Fear Itself. So keep a lookout for that next month. And we'll see you all then.
See everybody. We will.
See everybody. Bye.
See you, everybody, until Fear Itself. Goodbye.
Bye.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN.
Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo.
And now back to the show.